And the winner for Best Motion Hooker is Trish.
This is the wrong envelope, Hooker. It says Christopher. The winner is Christopher. It's always fucking Christopher. I want to be important, too.
Oh, I remember, Trish. You is kind. You is smart. You is important, girl.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
And welcome everyone to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast. My name is Tom and I am your host. And on today's show, we welcome Charnel. Did I say that right?
You did say it right.
Oh my God, thank you. Charnel Bush. He's a mentor for True Colors, a local nonprofit organization helping to ensure that those needs of sexual and gender minority youth are both recognized and competently met. We'll have more on that nonprofit organization on the second half of the show. And as always with me are my two amazing co-hosts, starting with the first one.
Hey y'all, Nick or Trish.
And the other German-Canadian actual American, ladies and gentlemen.
Good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
We have a very, very amazing show. There's a lot of stuff to cover. We've got an organization to talk about, which is fantastic. But we also have a very special guest on the show with us who comes full of many surprises. So say hello.
Hey, y'all.
Hi. Did he just say hey, y'all?
Hey, y'all.
Yes.
So Charnel joins us. He's a part of this organization called True Colors, which is amazing. And like I said before, we'll talk about it on the next half of the show. But you are also a podcaster. You're a fellow brother. You're part of the brotherhood.
Somewhat.
Let me tell you. So Nick had a conversation with him earlier today, and then he calls me up. He goes like, you know, he has a podcast, right? And I'm like, does he? So I was like, we got to listen to this. So I look up the podcast, of course. And then, of course, I start listening to it. And I was like, these bitches are good.
They're so good.
Really good. It's a fun time. They're very funny. And why don't you tell us about your podcast? What's the name of your podcast?
So the name of my podcast is What About Your Friends? I started it because I saw a lack of queer people of color and their voices in media.
I literally wrote that down. Didn't I write that down earlier?
I saw a need and I decided, you know, I have the skills, I have the time, why not fill that need? And so I just wanted to talk about life and all its, you know, trash through the lens of queer people of color. And so that's what we did.
That's awesome.
I also wrote down, what about your ex's porn tape?
Oh, God. I do a lot of sexy talk sometimes.
And evidently a lot of drunk stuff happens too. A lot of sexy stuff happens when you're drunk too, right?
That's true.
Well, I mean, he'd asked on his show, so why don't we ask on here? Who on this show hasn't had drunk sex? I know everybody in this room has had drunk sex.
I think that's the only way I have sex, actually.
It's fantastic.
It's not, if it's not drunk and it's not happening in the shower, I don't think I'm having sex.
Drunk sex is so much fun because it's sloppy. You fall over all the time.
How can you even remember your drunk sex?
What is that supposed to mean?
Oh. You were fucked.
What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, he walks in like at 12:45, like 15 minutes before closing, hammered.
What?
Last night?
That's night, yeah.
Oh, get the fuck out of here. Get the fuck out of here.
He was not hammered when he showed up.
No. I was not. I was fine when I left. I got drunk when I got home. And you guys were ruining my hangover today. You're just texting me non-fucking stop. And I'm like,
most people say, can you leave me alone? You're killing my buzz. Chris goes, guys, you're ruining my hangover. What does that even mean?
I was perfectly content feeling like shit on my couch by myself. And then you two wouldn't shut the fuck up.
And of course, you know, because
I'm like, I don't give a fuck that we have a show tonight. I'm dead right now. Okay, fuck off.
And because, you know, we just never give up and we just keep going. We're like the fucking Energizer Bunny. We just got power to go. We're still drinking. So we're going to go right into our signature cocktail. And this one comes to you courtesy of Chris. This is his creation. So, Chris, why don't you tell us?
Yeah, it was inspired by a recipe I had seen, but I made it my own today. So we're calling it the Kiwi Crush.
With a K.
With a K, yes. I was like, put the K's.
He yelled at me when I did the picture to put it on our
website
on our website with the post. He was like, "You put C, and I want a K." Like, okay, fine. Have whatever. You
a little
want.
Less cunty though, but okay, so it consists of vodka, Saint Germain, Midori, fresh muddled kiwi and juiced kiwi. You want the juice from it. And fresh lime juice, and you top that off with champagne. This was the longest cocktail. Literally took me like 20 minutes to get this one ready.
But it's so good.
I love it.
It was absolutely delicious. What do you think about it?
It's delicious. I'll tell you, it's the greatest drink I've had in the last month, so I'm ready.
But when we go on break, we're going to actually have a second one.
We are.
Good, because I'm already feeling this one.
So. Oh, yeah. That's why I didn't. I'm halfway gone. I didn't make a second one for the first half, because I'm like, I'm going to get cursive real quick.
Yeah. By the way, guys, Brian Britz, who is also one of our Patreon donors, just messaged me on Twitter and he said, "I look forward to your show each week. Makes my week so much better."
I love Brian.
So thank you, awesome. Brian.
Yeah, thank you, Brian.
That's very sweet.
You know, it's wonderful to have our listenership reach out to us. We've gotten so many emails, so many encouraging words, and you know, keep them coming. You know, we really truly love hearing from the people that support the show, because that's why we sit and do it. We sit actually for the sake of just
having cocktails and chatting, really.
Exactly. Yeah, pretty much. But it's nice to know we're affecting people's lives on every continent.
In a drunk kind of way.
Yeah, we're affecting their lives and we're getting them drunk.
You know, and it was fun to see how they reach out to us. Like, for example, when you went to Germany for those 5 weeks, it's like listeners were really into the whole you being immersed into another culture. And not only that, you actually met up with a couple of listeners and you met up with this amazing group of people and you guys ended up hanging out. And and tell us a little about that, because I don't think we ever touched that subject.
Well, I want to give a shout out to Jesse. He actually wrote to me right as I was landing in Munich and said, you know, I listen every week. And he runs an LGBT, I almost Tommy'd it there. LGBT.
He's been better.
He has been very good. Yeah,
I haven't fucked it up since like episode 18.
Come I know, guys. And I didn't want to be
Speaking
passed on to
of
me.
Which, I'm sorry not to, but this is 52. Like, technically, this is a year, but technically it's not because we still have, what, a week?
We're almost there, yeah. March 7th will be our anniversary for the year.
Fucking that's 52. Incredible. That's crazy.
Am I allowed to go,
Yes, you are. Yes, queen.
That's so fucking awesome.
We started March 7th, and I remember our first episode we did, it was called Wicked in Conversation.
Trump's tiny hands,
fucking Paul.
And then our second episode that we did was the drunken episode after the St. Patrick's Day parade in New Haven, and we were a mess. And then these bitches decide that they wanted to do another one, and we heard from two people
Far. Yes, I know Colin is down for it. So, Colin, shout out to you,
buddy.
Was it
only two? I thought it was three.
I saw two. And then our friends over from Sweden reached out to us and said that he would wanted to listen to an episode, the drunken episode.
So, how many do we have so far?
Two.
Two. And we called for four?
Three.
All right. So we need like five more people just to write us, just to blow it up Tommy's ass. Let's just, send us those emails.
I think it was four, really. But it's like, so if we do the drunken episode Sunday night into Monday morning, I'm not doing an episode on Monday afternoon. I want to sleep in after that. Because the last time we left here at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning,
that was a long night.
Yes, it was.
Thank you. I'm going to count that as three. By the way, I'm going to. There it is.
Shoot.
He's a guest, so it counts.
Okay.
So I completely interrupted you. You were saying.
Oh, no. It was just. It was nice to meet up with people that listen to us. You know, they went out of their way to try to, you know, get to know one of the hosts and start a friendship. And it really did. We hung out. We were talking for a while. He met up with me and we hung out on my birthday. Also want to give a shout out to Toby and Renee, my other German friends that I was able to hang out with.
Renee was actually on the show with us before he went back to Germany.
Yes, he was. Love technically him. Twice he came on, because when I called from Germany.
Chris, how did you meet Toby? How did you meet Toby?
You're a dick. You know that? You're such a dick. Yes, okay? Yes. I downloaded Grindr when I was out there, okay? I wanted to meet gay people, and they don't... There it is. Thank you. Yes. That's pretty much...
Oh, that's just... Oh.
Yeah.
Get off of Grindr.
It's like when you land in an airport, though. Come on, we all know.
Just be like, brr. But I will say, and people respected it. That's the difference between Germans and people here. I said committed and just looking to meet to make friends, and only two people. I only got two dick pics for the first messages. Only two. That's not bad. And then people would say, "Are you really just looking for friends?" I'd be like, "Yep." And they'd be like, "Okay." And I made a really good friend out of, met a really good friend on Grindr, Toby.
No, and he was amazing. And, you know, when we were Skyping, he was there and he was helping you with your technological issues that we were having, trying to get him on Skype. And, you know, being in a time zone that's 6 hours difference, it's so hard because we're recording our show at 6:30. It's 1 o'clock in the morning where he's at, or 1:30. And it's like the logistics of trying to make sure that you have adequate Wi-Fi or a connection is just crazy.
Make sure you're sober. Exactly.
Usually I wasn't. I'm just going to point out it was 12:30 math. But yeah. Someone would have called us out. And I'm like, let me correct it first before someone calls us out.
Well, that's true. No, but, you know, overall, it's always a great experience to have, you know, to be able to go overseas and you know, experience that. And so we're very proud of you. You learned, I'm assuming you learned a lot.
I did learn a lot. And bourbon was a lot cheaper there.
Yeah, we know. And I couldn't stop you.
No, no.
So Charnel.
Hey.
Sorry. I making sure you got it right. I love Tommy segues. So. Charnel.
But, but he said it more like a Charnel. Like, is it Charnel or Charnel? Charnel.
Yeah. Charnel.
You got it right.
Right? Yeah, you got I'm holding right. my boobies. Yeah, he actually has a picture of me doing that. It's
I do
terrible.
Too. I screenshot but it every
you're
time.
You're like, so Charnel?
I'm like, yeah. How can I help you?
Tommy, I don't know why, but he has the need to FaceTime people while he's in the shower.
I do.
Or, I would not feel comfortable putting my phone in the shower.
He's got like this little magnet thing.
Is it water resistant though?
It's waterproof, my
right? But he's got this thing that's like magnet thing in his shower. He also has one in his car. Mm-hmm. But like he literally puts his phone on the wall in the shower, and I'm talking to him, and he's just like scrubbing away.
Yeah. But, well, you know, it's well. First of all, I like watching videos. I like watching like the Rachel Maddow show, which I absolutely love. And she has a video and an audio podcast available on iTunes, I highly recommend that you watch it because she's just amazing. But anyway, going back to what Charnel, thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything that you want to talk about with us? Anything?
Oh, that's not fair.
Well, is there anything that came up this week that, like...
Oh, I feel like you guys put me in the spot.
Totally. Threw you under the bus.
Always.
That's not fair. I wasn't ready. I thought you guys were going to throw things at me.
Well, okay. Well, let's do this. So the Oscars were last night.
That they were.
There were
oh, we're
so
talking about the Oscars.
Well, so much happened during the Oscars, and so Nick has a little something he wanted to talk about on that. So I'll let Nick start, and then you can chime in.
Well, first of all, Viola Davis. That fucking bitch is amazing. And she looked... fucking fierce, but she is the first Black woman to win an Oscar, an Emmy, and a Tony. Now all she needs is a Grammy, and she's an EGOT.
Yeah. I'm waiting for her spoken word album next year.
I mean, drop it.
I need it. I'll pay for it. Fuck Apple Music. I'll take it.
But I mean, and then also Moonlight, the first LGBTQ plus film to win Best Picture. That's fucking huge for our community.
It is.
Yes, we clap for that.
And I have to be the first to say on the show that I have yet to see the film, but I'm so excited to see the film.
But you know,
Charnel, have you seen the film?
I have, and to be completely honest, I watched it last night.
It doesn't matter. So they don't need to know that. So, but how was it?
No, it was phenomenal. I think that as a Black queer person, seeing our stories and our struggles, like, put on a major screen. I'm sorry. Seeing our struggles.
Just hold it like you're about to suck it.
I was waiting for that.
Damn.
Says that every time we have a guest on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, but seeing the struggles of queer Black people put on a silver screen for, like, digestion of all mainstream audiences was amazing. Because we don't really get seen like that. We always kind of get, like, kind of erased a little bit. So that was awesome. And it was very authentic. It was very honest. It was very real and raw. And I felt things I've never felt watching a movie before. And it made me want things. Like, I want to be, like, 12 again to have, like, a mirror and have guidance and things I didn't have. So it was just, this is an amazing film.
You know what's interesting to me? I had, a couple years ago, I had an actor come into town. And we ended up getting kind of close and... he was also gay and he was an African American. We had this long conversation about how different and in some weird way, it's more difficult for Black men to come out as gay because of the masculinity surrounding that community. I don't know if you wanted to speak to that a little bit.
How much time do you have?
We have as much time as you need, baby.
No, I think the short form of that is that we as Black men, our masculinity is kind of boiled down to being protectors and providers. And historically, there's been this fascination with black masculinity where they have to take those two capacities, abilities away from us, whether it was slavery, whether it was the prison industrial complex. So we have this weird thing where anything that feminizes black masculinity or erases it is violent, and we have to push back against it. Wow. So anything that stands as, like, obviously homosexuality is, you're being feminized, it's emasculation, you're dangerous to me, I don't like you. So mm-hmm. it's just... It's
and that weird. Makes sense. And but I never heard that side of it before. And that's a very unique perspective, and I'm glad that you brought that up.
Well, I mean, even during the civil rights movement, right? I mean, gay African-Americans were kind of not allowed to be a part of the civil rights movement.
They weren't, but the beautiful thing about being black and being gay is that you learn the code switch. Like, your voice drops an octave, and you wear the right clothes, and you say the right things. And there are so many people. There's James Baldwin, and I don't want to forget his name. Oh. Banyard Rustin, Martin Luther King's mentor, was a homosexual. James Baldwin was gay. There's so many important black figures that actually helped push the movement forward while not actively being out. Langston Hughes, the Harlem Renaissance poet, was closeted all of his life, but his work, everyone learns about it in school, but we don't know that he was queer. No one tells us that.
So during our, we did an episode to commemorate Dr. Martin Luther King not too long ago, and we had one of our guest Lillian Marion on the show, and her father Winfred Rembert does a lot of artwork that's actually featured at here at Yale. Amazing artwork. But I asked her a question, and I said, if Dr. Martin Luther King were alive today, what do you think his response would be to the LGBTQ movement and our efforts to become, you know, integrated into society?
That's not fair either. Jesus.
Well, it is. Exactly.
If I had to guess, because I obviously don't know Martin Luther King, but if I, judging by his speeches, by who he was, by his wife, by his family, most of his family, some of them are problematic as fuck. Not to get into them, but they are. I would say that he would be a very strong ally, but only in the sense that he would understand what true allyship was. A lot of people don't understand that allyship equals mutual benefits. Uh-huh. Like, we both stand to gain something from it, but a lot of people can kind of revert and go back into the closet when standing with marginalized people. And unfortunately, I know there's some less melanated people in the room, but it's used, like, there's, when it comes to, like, being white and being gay, you can stand with black people until it becomes problematic, until it becomes troublesome. So Martin Luther King having that extra marginalization and standing with the gay people would make sense for me. Like, he would be there and understand, like, this is what I have to do. And I have privilege as a man to go into places that you can't go into as a white gay man. Or same thing as just a black man, like barbershops, like things, like little things that we don't think about where men share themselves, like, fully. And you've been to a barbershop.
Right.
And hear the things they say. So, like, he would understand what lines to walk and how to cross those lines,
yeah,
and do it with finesse that I couldn't do it with. So I would say he'd be standing full well.
I think this is like a perfect segue into When We Rise, which is coming out tonight.
But before we go into that, I concluded the same thing. During that episode, I said I thought that if Martin Luther King today was here today with us, I don't think that he would necessarily agree with homosexuality, because obviously he's a preacher. There's a lot of things that come with that. But in the sense of being inclusive and knowing what the fight was for equality and knowing how to separate both, I think that he probably would have been okay in the sense that he would help, but he didn't necessarily agree.
Well, there's also this, I have this, I don't know if it's anger or bitterness towards people who say, not you, but Christians who say things like, well, I just don't agree or believe in something. And I'm like, you don't have to believe in something for it to be real. Just because you're not looking at something doesn't mean it's not there. So when I hear, like, I think that he would, like I said, his mentor was gay. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's not so much him believing in it as so much as acknowledging that you are human.
Like, and you walk the same. That's the most important part. Yes,
right. Is that regardless of what my faith informs me, I know that you are living, breathing, and deserve the same rights as everyone else. As any, in Martin Luther King's time, as any living, breathing white man, straight white man, Christian white man. So I'm going to make sure you make it there with me.
Yeah.
And that's what would make him a powerful ally.
And
so he was convicted.
Awesome.
And just because I've said it over and over again, just because we have a man standing next to us instead of a woman supporting us in that facet of life, doesn't affect anybody else but us. And I feel like Martin Luther King would stand by that because he sees people. He doesn't see the fact that I'm, you know, wherever I'm, you knowing.
Well, it doesn't matter. I do it behind four walls. Nobody cares. You know,
girl, you do it. You color outside the lines, just like Carrie and Big.
Yeah, and a couple of dumpsters behind certain bars. Yeah, we know.
Why is it always a dumpster?
It's a dumpster. I don't know.
I don't know.
That's fucking filthy. It's fucking.
I know nothing about this. That is not my homosexuality.
Parking lot, for God's sakes. No, but here's the thing. I thought
tally it up.
Thank you, baby. I thought that this man had always been at least 100 years ahead of his time.
And he was always a firm believer of we the people means everyone. Yeah, like, right. He always believed in everyone.
Well, I mean, his speech, you know, his I Have a Dream speech, mm-hmm. which has been cited millions and millions of times, is just, you know, just a testament of that man's creed and what he stood for. And that's, you cannot doubt the word that he spoke. Mm-hmm. It's evident. It's evident in his writing. It was evident in his character. It was evident for everything that he stood for and everyone who he went after.
It just scares the shit out of me because if you look at today, you look today and it's like we had all of this forward momentum, mm-hmm. all this forward movement, this amazing person who had this amazing speech and did all of this amazing work. And we are at the point in history where we're either going to repeat history and be fucked again. Or try to find a way to move forward.
Now, there's one. Yeah, I agree with you completely. You know, our progress has been halted. But if you look at, like, the law of inertia, just think about when you're in a car. You're moving. The car stops. You keep moving. So something's getting in the way and stopping our movement. But we're going to fall forward. Like, we're going to overflow and keep that fight going, even though we're being halted.
Come on with this word.
That was kind of like a beautiful way to put it.
I just hope that when we do get stopped, that he gets trampled so hard that he can't even feel the weight of the people on him.
I want them to squeeze the orange out of him.
Oh, honey. That's not even orange at that point. It's just blood.
Cheeto.
Anyway, so speaking about the special,
those are all like
you
metaphors,
were talking about
everything
special.
They just said. Those are all metaphors. All right, Sean Spicer, those are metaphors.
Fuck Sean.
One more fun fact about Moonlight.
Yes.
The writer. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say this wrong, and please correct me. Terrell Alvin McCraney?
That's right.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. Proud of you.
Trish, I'm so proud of you.
I know,
give
right?
me some.
he was newly appointed as the chair of the playwriting branch over at Yale, the Yale School of Drama.
Really?
Yeah. That's he's running awesome. The playwriting department there.
We should get him on the show.
Fun fact. Moving on.
Fun
anyway.
Fact.
Ba, 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 ba.
Tweet him.
Special tonight.
Okay, so anyway.
Yes.
So there's a special on ABC tonight, and I'll let Nick take care of that because he had that story written down for himself.
When we Rise, mm-hmm. it comes out tonight, and I'm totally excited. And I might be a little confused, but is it coming out daily this week? Is that... I feel like that's what I read.
I thought it was a weekly event for like
that's
six...
That's what I thought. It's a mini-series.
It's a mini-series for like 6 weeks. Either way, the important thing is it does start tonight.
The 27th, yes. February 27th. For yeah. You.
And
so basically the mini-series events, it chronicles the real life of personal and political struggles, setbacks and triumphs, and the diverse family of an LGBT man and woman who helped pioneer one of the last legs of the U.S. civil rights movement from its turbulent infancy in the 20th century to the once unfathomable success of today. So this looks amazing. I don't know if any of you have seen the trailer for it.
Oh, yeah.
I almost cried just watching the trailer. I cannot wait to watch the entire series because to me, I think that it's going to prove to the American people, and as Nick and I were having a conversation earlier, it's going to definitely prove to middle America that, you know what, our fight and our struggle is real.
Yep. I doubt they'll watch it. I mean... Well, that's what, you know, it's what's great about it is it's being put in their forefront. Mm-hmm. They're going to see it whether they want to see it or not.
A major network is bringing this to the nation.
Right.
Exactly. Major network. That's huge.
And you know, and you can't take away also to the importance of the people that are working on this project. I mean, you have so many wonderful actresses and actors that are working. I mean, you look at Guy Pearce, you look at Mary
Louise Parker
and Rachel Griffin. I mean, these are like top-notch actors that signed on to do this type of work. And this is great. And, you know, we need this as a community. It is very important that the American people, as much of it, see what it was or what it is that we're struggling with mm-hmm. every day.
Well, earlier when I had said, like, that's a perfect segue, is because the creator of the show, Dustin Lance Black, he did this whole interview with Daniel Reynolds, which is great. You should totally check it out. Advocate, obviously, because that's all I fucking read. but he said this. He said, the defining architecture of When We Rise is intersectionality, which is the belief that civil rights gains can be best achieved when members of different movements work in concert. And that's why I thought what he was saying is a perfect segue into When We Rise, because there are so many different parts of civil rights movements, right? And we all do have to work together. I know that we've had conversations about Black Lives Matters and that whole thing where there were people that were asked to stand in the back or whatever to get, you know, but we have to just work as a community, everybody moving forward for all civil rights causes.
Well, I also feel that as a community, we have an advantage too, because we've already seen what it was like to have that civil rights movement and how to fight. And there has already been examples set for us so that we can just take all that work and just say, okay, let's move. Because a lot of people don't realize, you know, it took the civil rights movement over 100 years to really solidify and say, we're making progress. We finally got a law that protects our civil liberties and we're equal in the eyes of humanity. But then when you look at the LGBT community and you look at the short time frame, I mean, you think of 1969 when the Stonewall riots happened, and then you flash forward 25 years and see what progress we've made. That's significant, but that could have not happened if it wasn't for the groundwork that was laid out during the civil rights movement of the 100 years before that.
Please, yes.
No, but that's what I was going to say, is that there is definitely, at least in bringing up intersectionality and understanding that a lot of identities intersect, that in the civil rights movement, like I said, there are a lot of closeted, you know, queer people pushing these movements along. There are so many times that queer people are the catalyst to these movements. Mm-hmm. And so we all see Stonewall as being the catalyst, but there was work, obviously, had to have been work laid out before Stonewall, because how was there a gay bar? You know, how do people feel safe, and how do people know? You know, so I know there had to be work, and it happened in the women's rights movements, you know, and into the civil rights for at least for the Black Americans. So yeah, I totally see that happening. And there is framework, and it's awesome. And we as queer people, and me as a Black person in 2017, that's the word. In 2017, see that and can appreciate that and can build off of it. We need springboards.
Right. So. And it's great that, you know, we work with that framework. Right. And the best thing that we have going for us right now is that we actually have allies. Like, we actually have people that are out there and all willing to stand up and continue our movement. So that's the one thing I think we have going in favor. Use the precedents we already have put out there, but take the allies and the work with the togetherness that we have right now.
And the beautiful thing is that support and that network comes from all racial spectrums. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and even religious spectrums at this point too, because you've got a lot of religious institutions that are signing up on, hey, listen, we're going to be friendly to the LGBT community. We're going to be welcoming. We're going to, hey, come to our congregations.
The Pope is telling priests to stop being dicks. He's pretty much said, you're being a dick. Stop being a dick.
I think he lost his, though.
What?
I don't know. I think
he ticks me off every other day, though. So
yeah, I mean,
he says great things, and then he says terrible things. Uh-huh. He says great things, and I'm like,
at least he says great things, because Trump only says terrible things.
Right.
But then, you know, you're talking about Trump, but he's the Pope.
He's the best. He's the best at saying terrible things.
Speaking of Trump, I got a story for you guys.
Hold on one second. I want to say one. Sorry.
No, go.
No, you.
No, I said those are great mannerisms. Those are almost perfect.
That's why we need to fucking record this show.
You should see my Bernie fingers.
Before we move on from the When We Rise, I just want to quote Dustin one more time. He said, what we have to pay attention to, the cautionary tale, is that when we do that, not pay attention to being together, when we divide ourselves, when we lose sight of the importance of our interconnectedness, that's when we suffer defeats. And I thought that that was so poignant and needed to be said. Like, this article is amazing. People need to read it. But I think that this miniseries stands for so much more than we even know yet.
Now, this article that you referenced is in The Advocate, you said?
Correct.
Okay. So, what issue?
It's online. When we Rise. Shows how we are stronger together.
Just butt in. Don't worry about it.
Oh, no. It's like, I have a personal vendetta against The Advocate, but that's neither here nor there. I'll say it after the show.
Girl.
Okay.
Don't slam them on my show.
I'm just saying there's major oversights in a certain month this year. And I'm just
like, you know what? You are 100% right.
And
you
are 100%
right. Can I just say it so I get it off my chest?
Please.
Do it. Go ahead.
Okay,
please.
So we understand it's February 27th and that it's Black History Month. And my major thing we're talking about intersectionalities. There's queer black people and queer black contributions to America in the queer movements. And I Googled, because I'm very petty, I Googled, you know, every major queer outlet and seeing if they were talking about Black History Month, and they weren't until Moonlight won last night. And even then it was like, oh, this is the first LGBT film to win, you know, Best Picture. And I'm like, that's amazing. But you can't celebrate our stories and but not celebrate the people who, again, are the conduits of those mm-hmm. stories, the real life people who live those things and have added to your life.
I'm kind of bummed that, you know, we have to choose a specific month to celebrate Black History Month, because there's so much and history.
What the fuck? What's with them picking the shortest month of the year?
Because they're bitches.
Yeah, people are bitches.
But this is the thing.
It is the month of love.
Is that what it is?
I was also born this month.
Well, that's only because in many parts of the States it's very cold and people just stay in and just huddle up and hug up. And
that's the perfect time to fucking learn. Everyone has iPads, but the point is that...
Fuck and learn?
I know. I was like, fucking learn.
Both. Sure.
There you go. Any particular order.
That we have to... The point is to do the work to make Black History Month obsolete. Like, we shouldn't have one. You're absolutely right. But everyone's totally okay with, you know, with their racist grandpas and everything, making it so it was necessary. But mm-hmm. we're not working to make it obsolete. You're absolutely right. It should be taught every day. Mm-hmm. Latino history should be taught, you know, Hispanic, Asian history. It should be just incorporated in curriculum.
Indigenous people.
Human exactly. history should be taught.
It should be taught.
You know?
And it's so erased all the time. So if you work to make sure it's, we don't need anymore. I would love to see that in my lifetime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's true for many nations in where, like, their textbooks are reflective of their history or their version of their history. And I feel that, you know, we've worked so hard to try to forget ours that when you look at our books, really, there's no real reflection of what really happened.
Well, they say that the victors get to write the history books. So that's how it works. Mm-hmm. That, like, whoever's in privilege, whoever's in power, gets to write a book, and it's not just racial.
Well, I hope Trump doesn't write a book. Yeah. I hope he doesn't write a book.
He can't read.
Like, thank you.
I'm sure he can't write.
I did hear that.
Well, those little fingers, he can't even hold a pencil.
I did hear that the Trump library had a fire the other day.
I hope every book burned down.
All two books were destroyed. But the sad thing was, he didn't finish coloring them.
Oh.
Nice joke, Chris.
It landed.
That was good. So listen, speaking of Trump, so you know how when we go to a lot of events, we go to concerts, we go to, like, you know, rallies, etc. People always hand you stuff. They hand you a pen, they hand you a flyer, and you know, you take the flyer and you see it, and
we hand you vodka.
Yeah. You put on a pen and you have a good time. So that's all great and dandy, and it's always good to have all that propaganda, and it's amazing when people hand you stuff and you go to a concert and you're like, yeah, you're waving, you got the little glow sticks. It's fun. But what happens when someone takes a whole bunch of Russian flags, stamp Trump on it, bring it to the CPAC, right, which is the Conservative Political Action Conference, and start handing them out? And no one realizes that they're holding Russian flags. And all of a sudden, when he's about to come out and speak, everybody's waving a Russian flag.
That's fucking awesome.
It was amazing. And then to top it off, when they realized what was going on, they started running around trying to collect them really quick and trying to, like, not get it to make news. But unfortunately, people were already recording. They were already taking pictures. So these two gentlemen, two progressive activists, were behind what ended up being this amazing prank. So Jason Charter and Ryan Clayton, bravo.
That was amazing.
Props. It was probably the best orchestrated prank I have ever seen in my life.
Trolling.
And it's great because it's such a peaceful protest, because there's nothing you can do. They didn't break a law.
No. But you know what I started wondering to myself is, like, you know, how do you get 2,000 flags into CPAC?
My fucking mind is blown right now. I mean, you have Bill Clinton, who got impeached for getting his dick sucked. Let's be honest.
Well, they
that's
brought
why he,
the articles hold on, of impeachment.
Hold on. So that's why he got impeached. This motherfucker and his half of his cabinet, what it's turning out to be, is in cahoots with fucking Russia, and we're like, oh, whatever. And he's like, oh, you can grab pussies. Oh, whatever. What the fuck is wrong with you, America?
Well, they're finally starting an investigation against...
he tried to shut that shit down too.
They're trying to shut it down. His people actually reached out to the FBI and it said, you know, we want you to put out a statement saying that what it is that they're looking at, there's nothing there. And of course, someone leaked the actual document, the actual report, saying that, no, that's not what happened. And this is what we recommend. And this is what we found.
And these are our findings. And yesterday, Spicer takes all the his colleague's cell phones to go through, their personal and work phones, to go through and try to find out if anyone in there is leaking. I'm like, it's good just a fun. He calls this, a fine-tuned machine. Is how the White House is working right now. I think that's how he worded
it.
It's a goddamn mess.
Yes.
What's going on in that White House. It's a goddamn mess.
Mm-hmm. If you need to take your employees' cell phones to avoid a leak, it is not a fine-tuned oil or oil-tuned machine.
Fine-tuned machine.
It's a fine-toothed comb.
No, that's not what it is.
Oh. No?
Yes.
I'm wrong?
Yes.
Tell us fine-tuned machine is what...
Oh, it's what... Yeah, yeah, I know, yeah. But I think what he meant... I think what he meant was a fine-tuned comb. I think what he meant to say was fine-tooth, right?
Fine.
No. Anyway, no. Move on with that one.
Sure, no.
I was like, I like you guys, but no.
Sure, no. Yeah, no, we're on the just same page.
Him. It's okay.
Fine-tuned machine.
I'm not violent anymore.
No. Ah. It's not what I do, guys. It's okay.
Anymore.
I've been saved.
That's a warning.
So speaking of presidents.
The sexy one.
Obama.
We miss Obama. You. No. We miss Obama. And we know how... You know, he's loved by so many of us here, but he's loved across the frickin' world. And as many of you may know or may not know, yeah, we love him. Cheers to Obama. Cheers to Obama.
Cheers.
Clink. Oh, we haven't done that in a long time.
We haven't.
I can't reach. No. Nope. Sorry.
Okay. So, some of you may know or may not know that France has an election coming up this year.
Uh-huh.
And some of them are really trying and campaigning hard for Barack Obama to run for president of France. There's actually a group out there, Obama 17, for 2017 election. They plastered over 500 posters around Paris campaigning for their presidential candidate to be past U.S. President Barack Obama.
Well, he would have to become a citizen.
Well, obviously, yes. And well, that's funny because on their website, it says, never mind the legality. The website slogan is, the familiar, yes, we can.
That's awesome.
And they launched an online petition aiming to get 1 million votes before March 15th to get him as a candidate. So I just found that. I thought that was a funny article right there.
That's awesome, though.
Vive l'Obama.
But, you better not take our president. We need Michelle for 2020.
Michelle was over.
Yeah,
she was. You saw it in the inauguration. She was like, get me the...
Yeah,
she's like, whenever they handed her that box, she looks like, bitch, I don't even want your gift.
She was standing there, she's like, we've been busting our ass for 8 fucking years, and you guys did this?
This is what you're doing? All right.
Yeah. Guess what?
I love that woman, though.
She's every black mom. She was like, you know what? I'm all right.
I'm all right.
She's like, I'm all right. You do you. You do you.
And she's just like shielding her children. Let's go.
We're hopping on this plane to this island.
Don't look him in the eye. Don't look him in the eye.
When Melania came out that limo or whatever it was, that vehicle.
Just saying.
With that box and handed it to her, she was like.
So come to find out, actually, it's normal for... For them
well,
to
Michelle
exchange,
actually
exchange
gifts,
yeah,
too.
So,
but Michelle's
that went
face
back to the
just
Kennedys,
like,
I thought. That's been around for a while.
Yeah, but I don't know why that whole exchange was very awkward.
Well, it was because, you know, just the facial expressions that Michelle had
on her face.
She was just
like,
what the fuck? Yeah, I'm done with this. Come on. I hurry up. I want to get to the Capitol so he can swear in so I can fly off in my helicopter and go on vacation.
She wanted to go Hawaii.
The two people who shared faces were Melania Trump when she got the... No, excuse me. Michelle Obama when Melania gave her the gift. Was the same as when Donald Trump put his hand out to Justin Trudeau. They're just like, what do you want me to do with that? That's exactly what that was.
Do it. Just go for it.
No, baby. I was going to say that I think that I was watching a million videos because we all dragged Trump because fuck him. And they're watching, you know, Trump walk around, or no, Trump got out of the car and then Melania had to walk around.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't
and
wait
I
for
think,
her?
And they were saying that that's why Michelle was like, what kind of man is this? Like,
oh, it's there possible. You go. That makes sense.
Dude, it's trash. Like, we see Obama every time Michelle's there. He's like,
he waits.
Hold her hand up the stairs, down the stairs. He's such a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, part of it might be a little pomp and circumstance, might be put on performance because he's being watched.
Oh, definitely.
But it's also, like,
it doesn't matter.
But you
still
can see
to
that when
daddy.
You see them look at each other and the way they like interacted, like, yo, you knew there was some fucking happening in the White House. Like, you knew they loved
each other. Oh, you kidding me? Every single closet, that blue room, the purple room, the red one, the rose garden, everything.
I
feel like President Obama never slept, but there was an hour that
I don't think any president.
No one talked to him, and it was probably between the hour of like 1 and 2, and then he's right back to it. But that 1 hour.
Thanks, Michelle. You've reinvigorated our president every time.
You see
time.
The way he looks now? He's back from vacation.
You know,
he was out there like fucking hang gliding.
Yeah, you saw him in New York. He got like a standing ovation on the street.
He's got his shirt unbuttoned. He was Obama's feeling it. Obama's like, I got this money. I
got this. He got a standing O for getting coffee at Starbucks on Fifth Avenue. Are you kidding
well,
me?
Well, he deserves
decaf
it.
Decaf latte. Get into number 44.
If I was Obama, I would just be like, these fucks have no idea what they did.
But I'm rich, bitch, so whatever.
That's why I said, that's what I said last week. We cannot drop the word president. We need to say President Trump. We need to remind the people what the fuck they did.
Mm-hmm.
Remind them.
Yep.
That's fucking right.
Like, you want to, it's very irresponsible to wish Donald Trump does a bad job, because he is our, if he fails, Tommy, and this is actually directed to you, because I know
I hope he falls out of a fucking helicopter.
Okay, well, you have
and takes his cabinet with him.
My thing is, you need him. We want him to do well.
My president.
We want him to do well, because if he doesn't do well, that affects us. We don't do well. What we can hope is that he can hold on. What we can hope for is that he continues to lose support and keep such low approval ratings that he will eventually just have the deplorables will start to realize that this man is bad for the country, lied about everything, and then he won't be back in.
He's so egocentric. He's the first president in the history of the United States to apply for 2020 election the day of the inauguration.
Well,
I didn't know that.
Here's all I have to say about that.
I would just rescind your application.
Hashtag not my president. Hashtag will never be my president. I will never acknowledge that man because he does not deserve that acknowledgement. One. Two, we should fail. What? As a country.
No.
And I'll explain why. Because if they elected him, we need to feel the pain of what half of America did so that we can recover and rebuild from it.
No, we don't need to sit back and let the country collapse because of a mistake.
I felt the pain.
You can see it around the nation already. It's not about failing. It's about the people realizing what they did and standing up and speaking for themselves. And that's what they're doing
that
around
now.
The nation.
We're already failing. As a country, look at our standings in the world. We're already failing. It's already happening. And I am literally just sitting back and just saying,
I think people...
Y'all deserve this.
I disagree in a way, because I think people have, because of the situation we're in, separated what America actually is from what the Trump presidency is, right? So, like, the White House and Trump and his administration are, like, this, like, separate entity. And then there's the American people that are standing up and speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like the world can see that. Yeah. And so they don't see America necessarily as Trump's America. They see America as America with a fucking shitty president.
Yeah, that's exactly how I was, how people were. No, well, that's, I can say at least being in another country, on another continent, that's how people were viewing it to my face when they were talking to me. They don't view it as Trump's America. No. They view it as America and you happen to got that.
I just want to sit back and be like, told you.
Can I be super woke real quick?
Yeah.
Do it.
Woke
up.
Woke?
No. I think that I'm with you a little bit. Like, I get that, like, because I'm saying, like, you fucking did. Mm-hmm. This is you. Like, you should
I feel that the half that didn't vote for him should feel a little bit of that pain.
They should feel pain, and they are. We see it in the angry Republican town halls and whatnot. Like, these country white folks are pissed, and it makes me so happy.
Because they're going to take their health care away.
Right, and that's what it takes. It takes violence in whatever form it is to hurt, and it shouldn't take that. It shouldn't take people feeling something to understand that everyone else is human, too. But if everyone is to fail, we see what failing looks like. It's the least of us that are going to be affected. It's the most vulnerable of us. Mm-hmm. So it's Muslims. It's queer people. It's people of color. It's, you know, women. Like, these are the people that are going to be hurt. So when we all fail, it's going to be straight white men that are standing up, rich straight white men standing up saying, well, I don't know what you guys are talking about. America's been great as we're all in bread lines, mm-hmm. you know.
Exactly.
And we're all, like, wishing we could visit our loved ones in hospitals and have access to healthcare. So I don't want us to fail. I love that we are speaking up. But I do think that people need to feel it somehow.
So they
can
react.
Mm-hmm. In a way that doesn't burn us all.
Because
right now, we're reacting, but we're not reacting in the numbers needed to make change happen fast.
So speaking of everyone needing to be heard, there is an amazing new app that I have to talk about.
Oh,
it's
called
Five Calls. Okay. All right. This app, basically, you can download it, Android, iPhone, whatever, and it will, you sign up and it'll list all of the prevalent things that are going on. Like, What are you interested? If you're to prevent the dismantling of the EPA, you can click on that, and then all you do is you put in your zip code, and it gives you numbers to call. And all you need to do is spend, and it also will explain the actual thing and give you talking points, so that when you call, you're not just like, I want to support the EPA and I think what's going on is stupid. It explains it for you and it breaks it all down for you so that you can call and sound educated. So this thing called Five Calls, all you have to do every day, take 15 minutes, make five calls to your local senators.
And I really, really recommend that people do this as soon as possible. And I'm going to start doing it, because today the EPA is basically the noose is put around its neck. The EPA is going to be gone. Trump finally, it's not the full proposal, but he put the idea out there today of his new budget plan, which is going to be increasing military spending by 10%.
Everything else.
And it's going to come to $54 billion in cuts, including the EPA, which is going to be completely dismantled, not to mention it's being run by someone that believes global warming is an absolute hoax.
Well, you got to understand that this person who's running the EPA came from Oklahoma, and not only did he come from Oklahoma, he sued the EPA on like 9 different cases. He's got 9 cases pending right now that he sued the EPA, and now he is the head of the EPA. So he's not recluding himself from these cases. So he is now judge, juror, prosecutor, defender, all in one. It's going. He has an interest to make sure that, first of all, none of those lawsuits that he filed from the state to the EPA lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's monopolizing government.
So, you know, it's dangerous. It's a dangerous precedent set, and we need to watch that very closely.
Agreed.
Should we move into a break?
Yeah, we should, because I need a cocktail, and you know, there's so much still left to cover. We still have to
talk about True Colors,
which is can't wait, because there's so much information from that organization that I think that you guys are really going to get a lot of information from. So what do we want to do first, Ross?
So before we move into our break, we want to play that segment. So Ross Matthews, who's done 1,000 things, but hosts a podcast called Straight Talk that I listen to religiously now, responded to Milo, whatever the fuck your name is. Mm-hmm. And we're going to just play like about a minute, almost 2 minutes of his response. And then we're going to jump into our Angels and Assholes.
Isn't it Yiannopoulos?
Yiannopoulos? Yeah, but I'm just going to call him Milo, whatever the fuck your name is.
That works for me. So here's Ross Matthews. Enjoy this little commentary. I think this is amazing and very insightful. So here's Ross.
I think he's insinuating that like, I'm a flamboyant gay person, and that's bad, and that if you're that, you're less than him. Now listen, this is not about me, because I'm good, and I am proud to be the antithesis of whatever that guy is. Okay, whatever he is not, I want my face on that poster. Do you understand? I am proud to. And if he wants to hold me up as that, I will. I am that. I am loud and unapologetically myself and proud and 100% who I am. Okay. And I preach that. Preach loving every bit of part, every part of you. So I'm good with that. He can call me whatever he wants to call me. But let me tell you, I want to tell you something that drives me. I am driven by knowing that when I was a kid growing up in a farm town, I couldn't point at anybody on TV like me and say, well, look, I can grow up to be like that. I can grow up to be happy and 100% myself and open and honest and successful and proud of who I am, even if it's different. And I've been driven by being that example for kids across the country and across the world. The example I didn't have, because I think it would have been a lot easier if I had that example. So I've always been proud. And unfortunately, this Milo Milo, how low can you go? He has a platform, okay? And so the reason I wanted to talk about it is because I'm afraid that the kids like me out there now will see his message and not my message. This, you know? And so I want every kid out there who is different, who feels different, who knows they're different, to know that that's good. And that this guy and people like him who are going to say being one way is better than being another way are just wrong.
They are just wrong.
They are.
And with that.
And those words are just amazing.
They're perfect.
So we're going to jump into Angels and Assholes. So let me give Nick some love.
So if you don't get it, we're going from that to Angels and Assholes because our asshole is a very specific
asshole.
Asshole. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tommy. The following person has been chosen to be our honorary asshole. Milo, whatever your fucking name is, how low can you go? Is the former senior editor for Breitbart News?
Breitbart.
Thank you. I knew I was going to say it wrong. I knew it. But that's why I have Chris. Who came under fire for some racist remarks toward Ghostbusters star Leslie Jones, which ultimately led to him being banned from Twitter. He also has attacked several other people. Mm-hmm. He's also sparked some outrage after a video surfaced of him appearing to defend pedophilia. So for his hate, his stupidity, his ignorance, and his bigotry, we label this gay man
an asshole. Chris, where'd you go?
Well, I was waiting for you to say Anne and then jump. I get confused with the Anne in there.
Okay, let's do it one more time. One, two, three.
Asshole.
Thank you. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, this episode, we would like to dedicate this episode to Jean Carlos Mendez Perez, 35 years old. Jean Carlos's father described him as being a dynamic kid. He was also described by his friends as being loving, funny, and having a personality of gold, which made him a top salesman at the Perfumania? Yeah, I think that's what it is. Where he worked at. This is also where he met his longtime partner, Daniel Wilson Leone, after selling him a bottle of Declaration by Cartier. Both him and his partner, unfortunately, his partner Daniel, were killed on June 12, 2016 at Club Pulse. We would like to dedicate this episode to him, Jean Carlos Mendez Perez, and his lover. May he rest in peace. And here's Pulse by Melissa Etheridge. We'll be right back. Who you gonna hate now when there's no one left but you? Who are you gonna gun down if you can't kill the truth that it's inside of us? It's inside our blood. It's inside of Pulse. I am human, I am love, and my heart beats in my blood. Love will always win, underneath the skin, everybody's got a pulse. I am human, I am love, and my heart beats in my blood. Love will always win, underneath the skin, everybody's got a pulse. I am human, I am love, and my heart beats in my blood. Love will always win, underneath the skin, everybody's got a pulse. Everybody's got a pulse. All right, welcome back. That was Pulse by the incredible Melissa Etheridge. who we absolutely love, and joining us on the show right now with us, who has been with us since the beginning, is Charnel Bush.
No relation.
No relations, of course.
Chica! I'm too woke for my own good. I'm like, well, if we go back to slave days, I can't help it.
We've been having such a great time with him, and we're super happy that he joined us. But he is a mentor for the nonprofit organization True Colors. And of course, it is a very local organization. It's based out of Hartford, which is our state capital. And thank you so much for coming and agreeing to come on the show with us to talk about your organization.
No, I've had such a good time tonight. Thank you for having me. I feel so welcome.
We get to see two different sides of him now, because before we were talking about all the personal and all that craziness, and now we got to get professional and talk about, you know, the organization that you represent.
Of course, now that we're on the second cocktail, we're going to try to get professional.
Well, we're going to try to stay as professional as possible, right?
I can work wonders. You guys will be surprised.
So how long have you been with True Colors?
As a mentor, volunteer since 2008.
Okay. Wow, that's
been a while.
Quite a while. Now, girl. Go ahead.
I was just saying, girl.
So, oh my God, Nick, I'm so sorry. I forgot that you wanted to introduce True Colors.
It's okay. It would have been a downer anyway, but...
You could do it again. I'll pretend he didn't even talk to me. Go ahead.
So, a big reason why I wanted to have True Colors on the show today is because today is February 27th, and I've talked about this on the show before, but it's been 10 years today that my college boyfriend passed away from suicide. Right. And so it was really important to have something very positive and you know, promoting support for the LGBT youth for me today. And luckily, cohorts over here were completely on board when I wanted to reach out to True Colors. So True Colors is here today. But what really sparked me about True Colors was this conference, which is coming up, correct?
Yes, next month.
It's next month, where you guys, LGBT youth come from all over America to basically come together and be themselves. Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Oh, yeah. The conference is just that, a whole bunch of kids. And there's a lot locally, but some come from other states. And they come, and there's workshops, and there's drag balls, and there's lunch. You know, these kids come over, and they're allowed to be themselves, and they're allowed to show who they are and perform as who they are, whether it be gender or whatever. And it's so awesome to see the kids come and just interact with each other. And it's almost like watching like two kittens meet. Mm-hmm. Like, you're real? Like, yeah, other gay people exist. And I love that we played that Ross Matthews clip, because he talked about how growing up there was no one like him.
Right.
He didn't see him on TV. And I'm like, that's why we do this, because we need mirrors. We need to see ourselves, and we need to be normalized, because we are normal.
Yeah, we are normal. And it's like we played that Ross Matthews clip because, I mean, what he was saying, I thought not only did it tie into our asshole, but it tied so beautifully into what your organization does. It really gives visibility and a voice to who we are. And we're not weird because I queen out or because I sleep with men or because I want to wear heels. We are individuals that have needs and wants just like anybody else.
We feel.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We feel, we love, we there's a need for affection, there's a need for closeness, there's a need to develop you know, very inclusive relationships in our lives. I mean, I firmly believe that regardless of whether you being gay, straight, bisexual, or whatever it is, whatever you decide to be in life, we live our lives, all of our lives, our entire day, we go day by day meeting people who ultimately will shape who we become in our, you know, golden years. And surrounding ourselves with people that make us feel good about ourselves will ultimately help us so that when we look back at our life, we look back at it with a positive reflection. And that's very good. You need to, that is ultimately what you want to achieve when you get to your golden years. Mm-hmm. To be able to look back and say, yeah, I had some tough times, but here's what I've accomplished. Here is who I surrounded myself with, and this is where I sit now. I can sit back and look.
And what's so amazing about True Colors is, in a lot of cases, and correct me if I'm wrong, but some of these kids that are coming to this conference, this is their one outlet once a year where they can completely be 100% who they are. And that is what's beautiful. That one weekend is going to get them through that entire year that they're suffering. And it just, it's like this beacon of hope. And the fact that it's locally based in Hartford, it just gives me so much pride to know that I'm from Connecticut. Mm-hmm.
So we know that the amount of people that work for the organization, the actual board members and stuff, they're not, it's not a large group.
No, not at all.
But you guys have a very substantial volunteer program.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So can you talk about the volunteer program, what the size is, and how far out you reach into our communities, whether that's Connecticut or even outside?
Well, I don't have a real, like, a solid static number, but I know it's major. And the majority of our volunteers are in the mentoring program. And I don't know if this is going to play into another question, so forgive me. But I overstep, habitual line stepper. So there's, in the mentoring program, a lot of our kids are in state care. A lot of them are foster kids. A lot of them are in group homes. A lot of them, you know, so they don't have the parental support that a lot of other kids do who are coming up through high school and middle school and being like discovering their sexuality. And there's no support there. You talked about developing inclusive relationships. So the large part of our volunteering base are people who show up to events, whether it be Pride, people who show up to mentoring events like lights at like compounds, the holiday lights, picnics, camping. It's just, they're there, again, to be those supports, and it's amazing to see people want to help. There's a difference for people who want to show up to pad a resume. You can always tell the people who are there because it looks good, and people are there because it feels good.
Right.
And like in the mentoring program, everyone who touches these kids' lives, they know it's not going to be easy. They know it's not simple. It's not, loving people is not easy. We know that. But they do it because they see it as a labor of love. They see a need, and they meet that need. So it's amazing.
Now, if you wanted to be, say I wanted to mentor, how would I go about doing that?
Well, you would email us. But there's a training, usually. There's it's not intensive, but it's long. Usually it's a Saturday morning from like, I want to say it's 10 to 4. They provide you lunch and there's activities in there. But it's just like, you know, how do I want to say this? There's, you know, how do you respond to this? How do you react to kids telling you traumas and whatnot?
Right.
How do you react to kids? Are you sure you want to work with kids? These are special kids, sometimes in terms of needs, but also in terms of like environments.
Right.
Where are you from? What experiences have you had? There's a lot of things. There's a life map portion of it that I really loved when I did my training. And it was all just like, tell us about the most important parts of your life. And having to recount those things and having to feel those things again. And having to relay those to Kimora, who's our mentoring coordinator. And she feels like, okay, so you've had some experiences. You've lived lives. How many you've lived in your 30 years or your 25 years?
Excuse me?
Girl. I said it. I said it. I said what I said. But however many you've lived. And she sees that you are, you know, you're willing to give of yourself. And that's the important part, is that if you're willing to give of yourself and you're not doing it for some ego stroking or to make yourself feel better about yourself, but if you're actually looking to put out into the world what you're looking to get back, then you're good for a True Colors mentor.
Now, what is like, so when you look at mentoring a student or a child or the organization as a whole, what is the ultimate goal, I guess? Is there an ultimate goal, or is it just to create a safe, happy environment for these kids?
Well, you want to create a safe and happy environment, I don't want to use the cliche, it gets better type deal, because wow. Sometimes it does, and sometimes, because
it's
better,
true.
Because better isn't always the same for it. We understand this with the kids in our program, that framework for success is different. And so what we look to do is hope that you know there's life after the things you're dealing with right now. And what life looks like is not going to look the same for Nick. It's not going to look the same for Chris or Tom or Charnel. It's going to be different for all of us. So our goal is to make sure you're functional, make sure your needs are met, make sure you're loved and you're supported in all your responsible choices, and make you get there to the point where you're able to give back as well. That's the goal.
Can I ask you, this might not be the most appropriate question to ask, but what is one of the most difficult things that you've had to deal with as a mentor?
After segment one, I don't think any question is inappropriate. But go.
God, I don't know if I could say this. The toughest thing I've had to deal with was, well, like I said, a lot of them are state and state care. And
right.
I have a very visceral response to that because I was a foster kid coming up. So I have a special place in my heart for these kids. And I understand wanting to run and be free and be your own person, kind of in that emancipated feel. So the toughest thing is probably having a kid run away from a group home and be found in like New Haven.
Okay.
Like in this is like Manchester area. they got all the way down to almost the shore.
Right.
And that's all just with friendship and like catching rides and like knowing people, which is dangerous and scary as fuck. Like right. thinking about that, like how
did you do that?
Exactly. But it also speaks to these kids, like the resilience mm-hmm. And the perseverance and the talents and the problem solving skills these kids have that aren't being utilized in the right ways. So it's like, what do we do for these kids? Like, that's the toughest thing is like seeing you and knowing you know what you want, but you not being able to articulate that and me not knowing how to facilitate it is the toughest thing is that I know I need to be here for you, but sometimes you just don't know in which way.
So as a mentor, I'm sure that you've probably worked with several individuals. Has there been one that you can actually say that this is my success story? I have impacted this person's life, and you can speak to that person being a successful individual in society today.
You're gonna make me cry. No, so I do a lot of work with a lot of youth groups, mm-hmm. and I was blessed enough to come in contact with one young girl through a lot of youth groups, through a lot of organizations, through the Health Collective. Actually, it was the first time I had met her. They have the queer prom. Do you know what that is?
I don't.
Hartford usually has two. It's usually a winter one and a spring one. They have queer prom. It's at West Hartford Town Hall.
They did awesome. One in New Haven like 2 years ago, and then they didn't do it again. And I'm like, this is such an awesome idea.
Well, West Hartford has it twice a year. So if you guys want to, I think one's coming up, actually. We'll talk. I'll send you links.
Okay.
But I met this girl there, and then I was at a True Colors event like 2 weeks later. I met her again. And then she was kind of going through the motions, going from home to home. She ended up homeless at one point. And she had my number and she'd call me like once a month. And a lot of kids do that. They kind of disappear, but they always kind of know where home is. So they, I'm all right. You know, I'm just kind of making it. And I'm like, do you need anything? Are you safe? Are you clean? You know, is anybody taking care of you? That kind of deal. And one day was last year. I work in Rocky Hill now. And I was at this Cumberland Farms and I had my head down. I had my coffee. I was like tweeting or something. And she goes, oh, I know you.
Oh.
And I was like, I looked up. I don't know anybody here. And it was the same girl who's now an adult. She's 20 years old. And I was like, how do I know you? I know your face. And she goes, it was True Colors. Do you not remember me? And I'm like, I can't say your name. But I was like, oh, my God, you're you. And she's like, yeah, this is my full-time job now. And I've got an apartment. And I was sorry. And I was just like, oh, my God, this is why you do what you do. And it's not because you went to college and you became the successful teacher, professor, doctor, dentist, anything. Like, you found life after these things. Like, this is why I do this. Like, and it's those things. And most of this work is like, you don't get rewards for it. Most of the work, no one sees it mm-hmm. but you. So it's so beautiful to catch those little moments. And I've never told anyone that story. So it's like, it's these little moments that you go to work. I went to work that day riding high. Like, yeah. Wow.
Well, it's a sense, it's a real sense of accomplishment because I feel that, you know, ultimately, that's what you want to see. You want to see those success stories.
Right. And teachers and mentors, those are really the unsung heroes. Right. Like, those are the ones that really can shape people's lives. And it's rewarding sometimes, like, but you don't always get something back. But to run into someone and make a success story from that, that's absolutely incredible.
You know, because when I look, for example, Chris wants to be a teacher and, you know, he's made an effort to run all over the globe and try to assimilate as much as possible from a social and from a, you know, from that perspective. And I think that in your field, if you end up there, you know, if we don't make millions doing radio, you know, if you end up there, I think that that's going to be such an amazing thing to be able to speak to that, you know, you've gotten out of your box and you went somewhere and you went and did something different mm-hmm. and did something great. And I think that those experiences will help you shape and mold other young individuals that may be growing and looking to do what you do. And so, I mean, this is fantastic. Mm-hmm.
I agree. That's what I feel like I'm here for. That's what I feel like. I was talking to someone years ago at a Chili's and she asked something. She was saying something about the Second World War, and I chimed in on the conversation and started just going on for about 25 minutes. She's like, oh, where do you teach? And I'm like, oh, no, I'm not a teacher. I want to be one. She cut me off. She's like, you are sinning every day that you are not becoming a teacher. And I'm like, she didn't mean it in a religious way, but like some people, obviously, as yourself, they have a gift to be here to help other people. And that's the best reward, to run into someone like that you affected their lives.
Right. And then they'll pass those things on. It's those little
exactly.
things.
Exactly.
Like, you've given them tools. And that's what activists, advocates, youth workers do. Like, we see them and we have tools that we enable them and uplift and, you know, kind of project their voices. And now that they have those tools to actually function, they're going out into the world and giving a little bit back here and giving a little bit back there. And so there's a quote that I always use, and you can stop me after a while.
No, absolutely not. Please go.
But it's, and I heard it when I was young, and it's that we don't inherit the world from our parents, but we're borrowing it from our children. It's not up to me to make the world better for me. I would love to live in a world where it's like less tedious and not abrasive and it's happy. But I also have six nieces and nephews that I have to look at every week. And I'm like, if I can make it better for you, like I care more about you than myself. And all these kids that are in the mentoring program and other youth groups I work with, I'm just like, that's why I'm here for. Because you're the leaders of tomorrow. You're going to be the ones uplifting me in the world I live in. I'm not going to have my hands on anything anymore. It's going to be yours in 50 years. So It's like giving them those tools and watching them work is amazing. And you're right. I don't want to call it ego stroking, but it's awesome and it makes you feel good about yourself.
Well, I mean, ultimately you need that too, because that's what drives you to keep doing what you want to do.
You need to know, yeah.
You know, and I want to make sure that our listeners understand that the work that Charnel does, this is volunteer work.
No one pays me.
So he's not being paid to work for this organization or to do the work for this organization, True Colors. And if you want more information on True Colors, I just wanted to throw the website out there and it'll probably come up again. But it is ourtruecolors.org. Go on the website, take a look, you know, fish around. There's some applications there if you want to have more information on how you can become a mentor. You can go right there. There's an application. The criteria is there. What you need to do, all of that is displayed for you so that you could make an informed decision as to whether or not this is something that's suitable for you. But from what it sounds like, you've really made this something to really shape who you are as a person.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm one of those people who feel like I should be a public servant, and I grew up very religious, and stop me if I go too far, because I talk a lot, but I grew up very religious, and there's a, I'm going to say it, guys, forgive me, but there's a verse in the Bible, it's John 13, 34, 35.
I'm sorry, but if you can quote the Bible in an appropriate way, I'll allow it. Yeah, don't use it for negativity.
Oh, I never beat anybody up with the Bible.
No, I know. Unless I'm just saying you're not.
I think it'll be the first Bible verse on our show, too.
Probably. I can take you to Proverbs 18:6, where it's like a fool's mouth invites a beating. I use that.
Oh, fuck. Our show invites a beating? Is that what you're saying?
No, but like I use that a lot. I use that a lot to justify my anger. But John 13, 34 and 35 is just Jesus talking. He says, I give you this commandment is to love one another as I've loved you. And by this, will they know that you're my disciples? And that's what pisses me off about Christians. It's like, people know you love God by the way you treat other people. Are you like loving on people? And so when I go out and I do my work in whatever group I do or whatever way I'm doing it, I want people to see something in me. Like there's something bigger than me at work here. And whether that be Jesus or God or just society as a whole, like I recognize that the world's not just me. It doesn't revolve around me, that there are people affected by the changes and the choices that are made by me and other people like me. So it's beautiful, but it's,
yeah, it is. It's actually very enlightening.
Is it weird that I just kind of want to cuddle him right now?
So
that's very sweet.
So another question for you. So if there is a misconception of True Colors that you are familiar with or that you've heard of, what would it be? And what would you say to an individual that may have that misconception of the actual program itself?
Am I allowed? I'm allowed to swear. Why am I asking for permission to swear?
I've been saying fuck like all the time. I just
exactly.
said it.
And it's because the major misconception is that our kids are damaged, that our kids are fucked up. And it's not that our kids are damaged or our kids are messed up. It's that what's happened to them is so fucked up. Because no young person asks to be here ever.
Well, we're a product of circumstance. Well, we're a product of what we're exposed to.
And you, no matter what, everybody's damaged. We're all damaged goods, but we're goods nonetheless.
Right. We've all been hurt. We've all been part of things that have changed us for negative or for, you know, for better. So for me, it's just that like we go in with the idea that some of these kids can't be saved. And we're kind of pushing them through the motions. We're kind of guiding them and then letting them loose. And that's the misconception, is that these kids are not. They're not their circumstances. They're not, you know, their traumas. And
no, go ahead.
So we're just like, we are not, you know, we are not our experiences. And again, me being a foster kid in the past and being an abuse survivor and whatnot, like I see myself in these kids all the time. So what I want to do is I want to make sure like I made it out all right. And it's only because I had the proper supports in place. So as a mentor, as a volunteer, you showing up and people, and that's all it takes, is these kids seeing someone who's not paid to talk to them. someone who's not paid to spend time with them, showing up and spending their gas and their money to show and just to be around you and to love on you and embrace you is all it really takes.
Because they generally want to be there.
Yeah, and they want to be there. And these kids want connection. These kids are out here looking to be loved on, because a lot of times, whether it be our, you know, our gay kids, our trans kids who don't have parents at home who can love them or want to love them, right? Like, that's where we step in. We stand in a gap. And so that's the misconception that these kids are damaged beyond repair, and that's not the case.
Now, what I was going to ask to follow up on was, okay, so your organization works with several agencies. And let's be honest, some of these agencies don't have the best reputations.
Which ones are we talking about?
Well, I mean, when you look at, for example, Child Services.
DCF.
Okay. They really don't have a really good track record when it comes from certain states to certain states. And so do you think that a lot of these misconceptions could be because of the experiences that people experience with these particular agencies?
Yeah, I would totally agree. I can only speak for DCF in Connecticut. I was a product of it, unfortunately. And there's been a lot of strides made and a lot of progress made in their policies and their procedures and whatnot. But a lot of people's experiences with DCF have been negative. And a lot of these kids' experiences with DCF and state care have been negative. So a lot of times people come in like, I've heard about state kids. I've heard about, you know, foster kids, kinship care, adopted kids, and they are.
But at the same time, though, right, DCF, it's, you know, I can't really speak to it because obviously I wasn't a product of it as you.
No, but go ahead, yeah.
But the situation that these kids have been put in to be in DCF have already established themselves as a bad situation. They're already in a bad situation. They're already having bad things happen to them in most cases.
Yeah. So the thing is that DCF at its core is a good agency. At mm-hmm. its core, it does, it should. And the workers, what happens, it's not the mission. It's the people who are the vehicles for this vision, that kind of taint everything.
Of course, because DCF is a good thing. Like, health inspectors, it's a good thing, but no one likes when they come around. No. So that's kind of how you look at the DCF.
That's such a great analogy.
It is, and I'm so glad you said that. I was saying that because you said like, they are coming from bad situations, but the thing is that we need to make sure that people who work with these kids who are coming from these situations are equipped and trained to handle the kids who come from these bad situations.
Right.
Because you can't take them from bad to a little bit better. They need to feel that these people care and that they have their best interests at heart. If these kids come in and they feel like they're being ignored, like I did, I felt like I saw my social worker like once every 2 months. I saw my lawyer once in the time that I was in state care. So there's a lot of kids who are like, I'm not really being watched out for. I'm falling through the cracks. And then when it's time for them to age out, they age, either they go to college, which sometimes college isn't, you know, a plausible, you know, end game. So if DCF isn't going to pay for your college and you're going to age out at 18, what do you have? What life skills do you have? What has DCF taught you? Have they put you in a place that you can succeed? Do you have a trade? Have you finished high school? Like, all these things happen. So when you get to DCF, if DCF isn't really uplifting you, or if your experience hasn't been uplifting or affirming or guiding you towards a success,
they're just taking you out of a bad situation
and then putting you into adulthood and leaving you. Mm-hmm. So it's, you've got to.
Are there any other agencies that could possibly like help with education after you come out of the system?
True Colors is doing it.
Right, True Colors is doing. There are a lot of agencies that are in place to help. I know there's the Annie Casey Foundation, the Annie C. Courtney Foundation. I'm on the board. Plug.
No, please. Listen, feel free to plug away.
It's, no, they're in,
no shame.
The Annie C. Courtney Foundation is one of my really good friends, what do you call it, nest egg, mm-hmm. maybe? And she just wanted to, she's been a social worker for so long. She worked with DCF, and she just wanted to create a foundation that worked with kids who were affected by kinship care, foster care, adoption. And so she does amazing work. But these are, again, so we're the agencies that kind of keep kids from falling through those cracks. We're the ones, again, we stand in those gaps so kids don't fall through. So there are tons of agencies in Connecticut that do the work. It's just that it's that cliche that, you know, many are called, but few are chosen, and the harvest is ripe type deal, but laborers are few. So, like, people have to want to be involved, and these agencies are only as strong as their volunteers.
So, speaking of the volunteers, for those of our listeners who are interested in maybe becoming a part of True Colors, another organization similar to it, or even possibly starting a nonprofit just like True Colors, what are some of the things that you do with these kids? Like, do they come to the building and you just sit and you talk with them, or do you guys have different events, or you take them just, you know, go get coffee, like, well, maybe not kids, but...
But you'd be surprised at how many teenagers drink coffee.
That's a good
now.
Point. It's I drink insane. A shit ton of it.
I didn't drink coffee till I was 22.
Or maybe sweetheart, 20. But you're not a teenager.
I said when I was. Well, I was implying well, when I was.
I thought you were coming... I was like, don't do me, Tom.
Not yet, baby. Not yet.
I was like, I'm not the one. Okay? But no, so you're sometimes so True Colors activities.
I just got woke.
Right.
Like, no, instantly, I was like, no, I'm going to tell you one thing. Tommy was just like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. Am I going to blow up? What am I going to do? I'm sorry.
Fight me, Tom. No. The kids would say, I got you together. That's what that is. But no. Sometimes there are activities at our office. In Hartford, so there's like activities, there's craft night, there's movie night. In March, it's lemonade, Beyonce, yay. And so we have things like that there. We have like holiday parties. There's pagan Fridays where you know, it's like Wiccan and like all these, you know, religions that aren't necessarily mainstream. So it's really awesome for kids who are into that. But they also have outdoor activities. They have like cooking classes. And like I said, we go to like amusement parks. There's camping trips. There's so many things. And I think it's really important, especially for kids in state care, to be put back out there with the land and with nature, because there's so many times when you live in urban areas that you kind of feel disconnected. So I think having the option to travel around and do those things. And then we obviously have the conference where you're exposed to all these different workshops and you have to go to a workshop. That's the beautiful thing. But there's so many. It goes from teaching you about protecting yourself from like sex trafficking and having safe sex to filling fake, you know, pant stuffers if you're a trans boy and doing drag. There's seriously, it's so much fun to learn, and it's so much fun to be a part of these things. So it varies. There's so much to do.
And like you said, they do cooking classes and stuff like that. So you're teaching life skills.
Life skills, absolutely. Okay,
that's really great to hear.
Now, is this at all state funded or is this all privately funded?
No, so it's as a nonprofit, obviously, you know, you don't earn any income from selling anything or whatnot. There are donations, but we also are funded partially by DCF. So okay. It's like, so we do receive money from DCF.
Oh, so we need to make sure we don't badmouth DCF.
I'm allowed to contextualize. I'm allowed to say, in my experience or in the experience I've had, the DCF and people have these experiences. I'm safe. We're safe.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
I know how to frame the conversation.
But if you guys want some dates.
Never mind.
So we were talking about the True Colors, the conference that's coming up. And that's March 17th and 18th, 2017. And that's going to be held at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. So at UConn, right?
Yes.
That's awesome. It's a beautiful, beautiful campus. And
it's
I think
a lot of space.
Yes. So let me ask you, if someone wanted to help or donate to True Colors, what are we looking at? Where do we send them? Where do we?
www.ourtruecolors.org. That would be the way to go. The conference info, there's a drop down menu. You go there, it gives you, there's a donate tab on the first page if you want to give money, if you can't give your time. We also should talk about that. Like, volunteering doesn't just mean you show up and spend 8 hours a day with a kid. You can donate your time here and there. You can donate money. You can donate a skill. You can teach one of those cooking classes. You can teach a writing class.
I would love to teach a cooking class.
Tommy, you could teach a podcasting class.
There you go.
Okay.
How fun would that be?
How awesome would that be for these kids who don't feel like they have voices? You see how awesome it is to realize you have a skill that's marketable and useful to help these kids. Exactly. That's why I'm here, guys. So that's where you would go if you want to learn how to get involved with the conference.
Awesome.
And donate time or money or gifts, clothes. There's a lot of trans girls out here who would love to be pretty. They don't put them in some nice high heel boots. Not everyone should be wearing prom dresses. You know, give them some nice, you know, some leggings, you know, work it out, girl. We'll make it work.
So if you wanted to make donations and stuff, obviously, you know, the organization itself is located in Hartford. So if you wanted to make any physical donations, whether that's clothing or anything, where do you go in Hartford?
It's Arbor Street. It's 30 Arbor Street. I would say call ahead so that someone can expect you, and that makes make sure someone's actually there.
Yeah, because full staff is small.
It's four staff members, and obviously with a huge program like this, people are always in the move. Sometimes there's one person in there. We have interns as well, obviously. So there are people in there, but not everyone knows how to direct you. Just call ahead, email ahead. Just say, hey, I have all these clothes. You know, my daughter went on to college. She doesn't want these clothes anymore. I'm pretty sure a girl could use these. You know, how do we get these And it's like, oh, stop by at 2 o'clock on a Friday.
So, well, I got that phone number for you. The phone number for True Colors is 860. That's the area code 2320050. There's also a fax, 860-232-0049. And then there is a email for True Colors. So it is director@ourtruecolors.org. Is that right?
That's Robin, yeah.
Okay.
That's our executive.
So, and there's other emails and stuff. There's a whole bunch of like contact information, and which we highly encourage that you visit the website and definitely look at that, because it is a very, very important program and something that's really needed for these individuals that you know need to have this type of resource. And so thank you so much for taking the time and sitting with us and talking about this amazing organization.
Yeah. I mean, what blows my mind about organizations like this is you don't even know how many lives you've already saved.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. I mean, it's crazy to think about all of these kids that come through there that maybe just meeting you or meeting somebody that's a mentor there may have had a thought one day or was so beaten down one day and showed up there and now they have a voice. Now they feel a little bit more comfortable in their skin. And that's why I just love what you guys are doing.
And yeah, and like you said, you know, you met with that, you saw that girl and she told you how you affected her life, but there are so many other people that you have affected mm-hmm. their lives
and probably they haven't had they probably even haven't had the opportunity to say that to you. So that's
exactly.
amazing.
We commend
there are people
you.
That affected my life that I wish I could do. Sometimes it's just a smile or a good morning or like, do you need anything? The fact that someone was concerned and they felt alone in the world is like, you know what? I can make it one more day. Like I might have it in me to go another week. And that's all it takes, man. That's all it took for me. There were times where I was like, I'm ready to leave. Like there's nothing else for me here. And all it took was someone smiling like, are you good? Are you all right? And I'm like, no, I'm not. And they're like, well, what can I do for you? And that's all it takes. Mm-hmm. It's someone willing to help, or if they can't help you, finding someone who can.
You know what? I'm going to say this, and this is like ridiculously stupid and kind of emotionally horrible and weird.
It's
but
so
this,
trash.
I'm terrified. This is the first time in 10 years that I haven't cried because of Matt's passing. All I felt was positivity and things that are just like productive and like happy. I'm just so glad that you're here and talking about this.
I love the hug you. I'm such a hugger.
I'm just like,
so
this
terrible.
Is like,
please do.
But like, this is what I needed today. And I'm so thankful that True Colors
Don't
came
do
down
this.
And talked to us today, because it was a beautiful, it's beautiful. And I'm thankful that you're here.
I'm so glad I'm here. Oh, I'm such a sap. Don't do that. I've turned into such a marshmallow.
And if you guys want to hug, I'll take a picture. Please do.
Wait, tell me what I look like.
No, you can just get up. Just get up and hug. It doesn't matter. It's...
I've got headphones. wait. Let me put this.
Oh, now we got a flash?
Yeah, there we go. 1, 2, 3. That's awesome.
So, I'll give anyway, you a real. So what we did was I took a picture of them hugging, because it's a beautiful thing. You know what? Human interaction is very important, and it's a very crucial and essential to the development of the human spirit, of the human psyche, and the evolution of friendships and togetherness. And we do this at this table every single week after week. Actually, even outside of this table, because we work together, we share a lot of experiences together, and it's a beautiful thing. And we're super excited and super privileged to have you come and sit with us and share your experience and be a part of our experience.
I'm glad I was able to be a part of this. This is awesome. It's like home.
So you know what? And good. Whenever you'd like, if you ever want to come over and have a chat with us, you're more than welcome.
I'm never leaving. Don't tell me that.
I do love to point out that we were had a conversation where we're like, oh my, are we insulting the DCF? We got to be careful. Where we insult the president of the United States
more than we blink. Like, well, you know,
but so when it's like, oh, the DCF, hold on, be careful.
But when you think about the president of the United States and an organization that
helps people,
as he says, directly. At the core of the organization, it is there to help people.
Exactly.
The people that work there, however, that may be a different story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a big difference. So with that, I think we need to start putting a rubber on the episode. We mm-hmm. have some announcements, and we'll get to the end of all that. I don't want to delete whatever it is that's here. So let's start with the announcements, okay? Ladies and gentlemen, again, to our guests. Thank you. If you love our show, you can head on over to iTunes and rate us and leave a review. This allows our podcast to become more visible with Apple or the iTunes ecosystem. You can also do that on Google Play Music and Stitcher Radio, because they also allow for you to be able to rate our show. You can also become a Patreon. In using this particular service, you, our listener, can help to support our show by pledging as little as a dollar a month to help us, you know, do what we do, and it would be a really huge, huge, amazing help. So, Chris?
Next week, we welcome author and radio personality, Jess Bronis. Bronis, is that it?
I'm excited.
Ah, okay. Making sure I got it right. I was like, Bronis, Bronisaurus, Bronis, Bronis. That's how I remembered it. Anyway,
oh my God.
Continue. She's the creator of Drinks with Jess, a podcast which is also available on iTunes. She will be discussing her new show, The Dating Pool Podcast, which launches tonight, which is February 27th. So tune in next week.
She's really just going to come on and shoot the shit with us. But yeah, that's beside the point.
The norm. Can't wait.
Nick announces, thank you to our guest, Charnel Bush, no relation. Do you want to plug yourself or your podcast right now?
Well, I wanted to, yeah, I want you to tell us a little bit about your show.
Am I allowed to turn on my sexy voice?
You can do whatever you want.
Do competition, Trish.
I don't know if I can do it.
Oh, you already beat her.
It's beautiful. Talk German, honey. Should we call Glenn North?
Ooh.
Anyway.
No.
You're a cunt. I don't touch me.
We should be all touching and agreeing right
we
now.
We can touch.
No.
Fuck them.
No. Touching circle.
I'm done with everybody here. I'm just going to finish this up and wrap this up and go home. Listen.
All right, so
if you guys want to find me, you can find me at What About Your Friends podcast. We're available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, I guess Twitter. Can I plug all that?
Absolutely. Yeah, do it.
Well, you can find us on Twitter. That's at WAYF_podcast. On Instagram, WAYF podcast. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm pretty. At Charnel B, that's CharneilB. We're a podcast. Again, we have a lot of fun, but we also hit a lot of profound and serious topics about just life, its messiness, hurt, love, work balance, whatever, through the eyes of queer people of color, which is very important.
It is important, and it was great. I listened to my first episode of yours today, and it's great, and I can't wait to listen to more.
As did I.
So thank you so much for being on our show today. It was amazing. For more information about True Color, True Colors.
There you go.
And how to help, you can visit www.ourtruecolors.org. Also, I need to plug one little thing about myself. Last week I said that I'm sort of dating somebody.
It's official.
I'm not sort of dating somebody. I have a boyfriend. His name is Ian, and I like him.
Leave him.
Aww. Ian, congratulations. You are... Oh, Lord have mercy. You have no idea what you got into.
I know, right?
Got yourself into, but
so does this mean no more blowjobs?
It's such a sexy name.
You can't touch each other under the table anymore.
What?
Ian, welcome to the family. And I'm sorry, baby?
I was like, I missed all that? What was happening last week?
These two, there's a spare room for a reason.
Mm-hmm. That's why we don't record it, because my face is usually like...
Yeah.
That'll do it.
I just don't get it. I really don't get it over here. But Ian, darling, you remember
drunk sex. That's what you're talking about. Just keep drinking. She looks prettier.
Just like we have invited the other boyfriend for Chris. I will extend the invitation to both of you now. Again, if you ever want to sit in and just sort of kind of watch us do what we do, I'd like to see the reaction of these two. Sometimes clowns.
I feel like
when their boyfriends are in the room.
I feel like we should also give a shout out to his mom because she listens to our show. So, Deb, I can't wait to meet you. Totally excited.
Your mom.
I would never let my mother listen to this.
I don't know why he lets her, but hey, Deb, you're the shit.
Does she listen?
No. I would never. She asked about it before. I'm like, nope, stop. She's like, so what's this gate? I'm like, stop it, mother.
Well, you can let her listen after episode 5.
You're a bitch.
I know that's our kink in the fantasy episode, and you can learn so much about us on that episode.
I will go there tonight.
And it's kind of Chris's drunken episode.
Yeah, that was for the first like 15 episodes.
No,
nothing wrong.
No,
with it.
I just couldn't. No bourbon.
But you know what? We love him. Okay, so we're closing this show. We're putting a rubber on it. Chris, go.
Alrighty, guys. Our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It's also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
You can find us on social media, Facebook, GayTalk 2.0, Instagram, GayTalk 2.0, Twitter, at GayTalk20. Email us at GayTalk2.0@gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
You can also contact us by visiting our website, where you can leave us a message or a suggestion. You can submit a question for the cast and or an individual host. You could also leave us a question via voice message for the cast to answer on the show by calling 334-GAY-TALK. And again, if you need all those numbers, it is 334-429-8255. And as we like to say, ladies and gentlemen, it has been a pleasure to do our show tonight for you. Thank you so much. And y'all have a good night.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.